With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Right, quickly, before we get on with the episode, we've got an announcement. The MMA Fan Podcast is now sponsored by Free Train. Blake, what's Free Train?
Free Train is a fantastic company that do these amazing vests for when you run, when you train. Whether you're going for a run or hitting the bag, you can keep your phone close to your chest. And yeah, they're brilliant. They've got a little pocket for your keys. You no more do you need to have your phone rumbling around in your pocket or at an awkward angle on your arm or anything like that. You've got the vest on. Phones there, easy access to it. They do some great gloves as well to keep your hands warm and be able to touch the phone and everything. It's all linked up with your phone. So yeah, they're a fantastic brand. A couple of pockets for your keys, everything you need when you go for a run or if you're hitting the bag training.
And you're not just saying this for the sake of it. Before they even become our sponsors, you had one of these vests, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I've still got it. I run with it all the time. But yeah, before they became our sponsors, I had one of these vests. They are genuinely brilliant. I really like them. And yeah, I'm really pleased they're our sponsor.
And if you want one, if you head over to freetrain.com, when you go shopping and you put all your stuff in your basket, just before you check out, if you put in the code MMAFAN, you'll save yourself 10%. Don't say we don't spoil you here on this podcast. 10% off an amazing vest from Free Train. www.freetrain.com.
Right, let's get on with the show.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but we've got another sponsor to tell you about. Phil Supreme. They're a nationally recognised brand who offer only the very highest quality of natural supplements. Their extensive range includes a range of medicinal mushrooms, nootropics, anti-aging products, gut support products, green powders, vitamins, and much more.
Yep, they've worked with fighters from all the top promotions, including UFC, Bellator, Brave, and Cage Warriors, with a solid reputation of providing results. So check them out on Instagram, which is at Phil_Supreme. Or their website, www.philsupreme.co.uk, and make sure you use the code MMAFAN for a cool 15% off your first order. Don't say we don't spoil you.
Hello, and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. It's UFC 265 post-show, recorded the morning after the big event. Obviously, sitting opposite me today, Blake Harrison. Good morning.
Morning, mate. How are we?
I'm all right. Did you stay up for it last night?
Well, technically, I didn't. I had my second Pfizer jab on Friday and was feeling not too bad, but a little bit rough on Saturday. And then I went to bed thinking, I'm just going to get up in the morning and watch it. Mm-hmm. And a car alarm went off at 4 a.m. And I was like, oh, fuck it. Go on then. I'll get up for it. So I went downstairs at about 20 past four or whatever and watched it from just as they were chatting to Luque after his win. That's when I started watching it.
Okay. Just watch it or get involved? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think what you're alluding to, Stu, is that I may have put a little tweet into the ether, you know, not necessarily expecting too much, just going, you know, world, These are my thoughts on the upcoming bantamweight clash between Munoz and Aldo. Mm. And lo and behold, on that bottom left of the old screen, Rooney was yours truly's tweet. Popped up there like a phoenix from the ashes.
Yeah.
In all its glory, in front of a worldwide audience, my thoughts on the UFC broadcast. Mm. So what I think this ultimately means is I've made it in life, and every other human being that hasn't been on the bottom left of that screen during a UFC broadcast, I'm now better than them.
Yes.
That's what that means.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, there's things in life that you just never forget. And, you know, if I had like a list of, you know, the best things that ever happened to me in my life, you know, number three, probably like becoming a dad. Number two, scoring that winning penalty at Soccer Aid in front of 80,000 people at the Theatre of Dreams, Old Trafford, securing
England. Just to clarify, so that's just above having kids, yeah?
Yeah.
Yep,
so
right,
three, just to clarify, three's kids.
Yep.
Two, winning penalty at Soccer Aid, securing England their, you know, latest, you know, major trophy in any footballing tournament. And then now number one,
wedding
the
night.
New number one spot is my tweet on the UFC broadcast. So that's how that works. One, two, and three. In that order, UFC broadcast, Soccer Aid, having kids. That's how that works.
Do you want me to be perfectly honest with you about this, right? I think it's brilliant that you've concocted some elaborate story where you obviously went and kicked your neighbour's car just for an excuse to get out of bed. but I missed it. And I'm not just trying to rain on your parade. I didn't see it. And this morning,
I got that feeling because I would have expected some kind of message from you.
Of course,
I was kind of gutted.
I would have been really excited and I would have messaged you, of course. And I would have been obviously ridiculously jealous. But I missed it. And this morning I was recording something with one of the gang, Scroobius Pip, on his podcast. And we was obviously having a chat about the fights, and he went, got his tweet up, didn't he? I was like, what? And he went, yeah. I was like, when? And I presumed it was on the one fight that I've not watched yet, which we'll get to. And no, it was on the Aldo fight, apparently.
It was on the co-main event of the evening. Not just any old little prelim.
Yeah.
The co-main event of the evening. Just as you were watching Pedro Munoz and just as they were about to announce Jose, the King of Rio Aldo, Blake Harrison, 23, from Twitter.
I've got to adjust my settings on Zoom to widescreen to get your fucking head in the shot. Right. So, I mean, you've had a good day, right? Because not only did you get your tweet on the UFC, and obviously, banter aside, how fucking cool is that? That's so cool, man.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? That's pretty amazing. I was properly chuffed. I know we've been mucking about, we've been joking, but no, I was genuinely really chuffed with it.
But you'd also done some work for the UFC yesterday, right?
Yeah.
We've not spoke about this, so I'm all ears. Yeah.
So it was only on Facebook or whatever, but you know, start small. Yeah, it was on the UFC Facebook page, they do a fight day focus with John Gooden, former guest of our show, John Gooden, hosting it. And he has a couple of guests on to discuss the fights that are taking place that night. And he had Paul Craig, another guest of our show. We've recently released an episode with Paul Craig, light heavyweight contender in the UFC. And yours truly, giving their opinions on what they thought was going to go down on UFC 265. So again, yeah, just ridiculous, really. And John's lovely, Paul's super nice, as anyone that's listened to our podcast with those guys would know. And all of the kind of guys setting it up as well, Gary and John, they were, shout out to Gary and John, who I never saw because they never put their cameras on, but I did hear them and they had lovely voices. And they were brilliant, honestly. It was over before you know it type thing. You kind of get into the swing of talking about it and you start, because I was a little bit nervous. I thought it was going out live. It didn't go out live, but I thought it was going out live and I was a little bit cack in my pants. But
you bossed it, mate. You come across really
thanks,
well.
Man. Like, oh, thank you.
It really did. Obviously, if you would have made a mistake and slipped up, I would have pointed that out straight away. But you didn't. I thought you bossed it, mate.
Thanks very much. And I was correct in a couple of my predictions as well, which we will get onto in this show.
Okay. Well, in regards to today's show, there's a lot to talk about on the main card, and obviously we don't want to go too far over the hour. So should we pick a couple of fights from the prelims, and obviously we can work our way through the results of the fights, but obviously let's get to the main card. But I'll kick things off, if you don't mind, early on.
Go for it.
I really liked the Carolina Penn fight.
Yeah? Yeah? What did you like about it?
I just thought Penn looked terrifying. I thought she looked really, really strong. You know, Carolina's absolutely no joke whatsoever. And I think, you know, this Penn's had a bit of time off recently, hadn't she? And let me just check when her.
Yeah, and I believe it's Penn A, just so you know, just like the pasta. Right. It is Penn A.
I'm glad I didn't say that on Facebook Live with UFC.
Yeah.
So she hadn't. I mean, she—that's her second fight since 2017.
Yeah,
so,
she's had about 3 years off. I think there was some COVID problems with some opponents. I think she got injured with some opponents. I don't know if there was anything else mixed in there as well. But yeah, 3 years off, and then she's come back with two wins, which is great.
Yeah, and I thought, yeah, it looked absolutely solid. And obviously, she's got some losses on her record. But when you look at the losses on that record, Andrade, Joanna, and Esparza, like, the best in the world. And so she's got, you know, and to come back now on a winning streak, two winning streaks. So yeah, be interested to see what's next. I think she looked absolutely solid last night.
Well, yeah, I hope she gets a ranked opponent next, just because I know she's only on a two fight win streak and strawweight is a really stacked division. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, I maybe should get it up just to check, but I think she's about 39. You know, she's not. Well, yeah, it says here, she says she's 38, but I mean, I think she'll be 39 soonish. And I think that, you know, she's not got a huge amount of time left. And she's a big name, you know, she was out for a few years, not totally her fault. So I'd like them to kind of just throw her in and get her a ranked opponent somewhere in the top 15, maybe. But yeah, that's what I hope happens for her, because she did look good. Kovalkiewicz, on the other hand, is on, I think, a five-fight losing streak now.
Yeah, that's not looking great, is it?
It's not looking great. I don't think she's a spring chicken anymore either, if I can be so rude. Mm. I wonder if she might end up getting cut, which is sad to say, and I never want to say that about someone, and I hope they get to continue their career in whatever fashion that they want to. But a five-fight losing streak in the UFC, if you're not a big, big name
in that stacked division.
Yes, it doesn't. And she's fought for a belt before as well. Mm-hmm. So you'd imagine that it's like, even though her wages aren't going to be that big, they're not going to be as small as some of the younger people around her kind of ability level and sort of kind of rankings within that unranked section, if you get my drift. So I wouldn't be surprised if they cut her loose, which would be sad for her. Maybe she can go on and get some more money elsewhere. Maybe there's some money for her over in a Bellator or any of those things, or maybe even in like the KSWs of the world or something like that, those kind of Polish promotions. Maybe there's something there for her, but it's not looking good for her.
Well, just to touch on other fighters that are maybe not spring chickens, we've got to shout out Ed Herman, 40 years of age, now 25 and 15, just flicking through his opponents. I mean, he has earned his stripes. He's fought the best of the best and has got, you know, some legit wins. But I think the fight he got put in last night, it was just different level, I thought.
Yeah, maybe it was his age, maybe it's Menafield's ability. He looked second best. And those leg kicks were so nasty. And the lump that he got on his shin was so bad. I think Bilal Muhammad put out a tweet saying he's grown a calf on his shin.
Yeah.
Which was pretty funny, but it was bad. And you could tell he was really, like, the doctor came in to check on him before the start of round three. And he was bouncing around. I mean, tough as anything. I mean, to just be bouncing around. No, I'm fine. No worries. No problem. And it was clear that the leg was really, really bad.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you noticed this, but at the start of round three, he had to attempt to touch gloves with Menafield 3 times. He was just kind of slapping the air because he couldn't stand properly. So they went to touch gloves and they missed 2. So they touched gloves like 3 times because he kept just missing.
Right. I mean, yeah, maybe. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was the leg kicks that absolutely, you know, determined where that fight was going and was the key factor to both performances. And yeah, we're seeing more and more of it now, aren't we? Like the leg kicks and the calf kicks are just absolutely just destroying fighters at the moment.
Well, that's what Rogan tweeted. Rogan said that, you know, the calf kicks are changing the game. But then, I mean, I've heard other people say, and it'd be interesting because we're going to have, I don't know if we're allowed to say, we're going to have a Muay Thai specialist on soon. Yes. I don't know. I don't want to say too much. I don't know what we're allowed to say. But we're going to have a Muay Thai specialist on soon. And I believe I want to talk to them about this because in Muay Thai, you don't get the calf kicks in the same way because it seems like people know how to defend them properly. So you feel like there's going to be an evolution within MMA that either people learn to defend these properly, maybe you'll get a few more leg breaks, which I hope doesn't happen for the safety of the fighters and stuff, but maybe you will because people are defending them properly and that will put people off doing the calf kicks. But the other thing that Dan Hardy put out a while back was that the next evolution he thinks we'll see in MMA is people that switch stances regularly. Like if you are just an orthodox or just a southpaw fighter in 5 years' time, he thinks you're going to be a bit of a relic and, you know, you're going to have to, because of the way these calf kicks are going, you're going to have to be able to fight well from both stances, which is a really interesting theory. And maybe Dan Hardy's right about that as well. So that'll be an interesting one to keep the eye on and how people deal with the calf kicks going forward, because they are becoming really problematic for fighters.
And when we get onto the main card, like the kind of Muay Thai style, I think we saw the pros and cons of it in the main card, which I want to talk about when we get on to that. But I guess you're going to want to talk about Rafael and Bobby, right?
Oh, yeah, boy.
So this is the one I've not seen yet.
Oh, you idiot. This is the best fight. This is the fight of the night. Like, it wasn't only like my fight of the night, but it has officially been given the fight of the night bonus by Dana White and the guys at the UFC. It was an absolute corker from start to finish. I thought Aldo Munoz would be the fight of the night. This was the fight of the night. It was just all-out action and entertainment as well. Like, Bobby Green at one point sort of running away from Fazeev and Fazeev kind of chasing him down, like doing a ooh kind of face. There's a great like little picture of it online at the moment. It was brilliant. They were throwing bungalows at each other, it seemed. It was just like amazing. It was a really, really brilliant fight. And the entertainment value, Bobby Green was talking to him in there, Fazeev was talking back, and it seemed that the first 2 rounds, Fazeev won. They were relatively close, but Fazeev, I think, won both those rounds. And then round three, Bobby Green really came back and I think won that round, maybe the clearest of any of the rounds. But obviously, it only won one round when Fazeev had won 2. So I thought the decision was absolutely right. There was a 30-27 from what I remember on the scorecards, which I'm like, I don't get that at all. Bobby Green, I think, clearly won that 3rd round. But it also made me think, gosh, if that was a 5-round fight,
yeah,
Fazeev looked like he was really slowing down, really getting tired, and Bobby Green was not tiring at all. He was there, and he was going for it, and it was an absolute cracker of a fight. You have to go and watch that one.
Yep, it's on the agenda for today. And Fazeev now, 4-fight winning streak.
4-fight winning streak. I would say he should fight a ranked opponent, but you probably don't know this. He's called out Hezbollah.
Really?
You know, the little guy from the meeting called him out. He said, you know, the money fight is Hezbollah. Come and fight me. Absolute legend. I think Hezbollah might have responded as well.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's absolutely brilliant. So he's there. He's put on a fight of the night performance. He could be calling out any ranked guy in the lightweight division. You know, 4-fight win streak, entertaining fighter. He's guaranteed, I think, to get a ranked opponent next. I don't know who that would be. I might have to check out the rankings in a second just to see who I think that will actually be. But he's an absolute legend because he's gone, screw that. I'm calling out Hezbollah. And I really hope they make some good stuff happen together because that can be some really great content online.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I tell you what, looking at it, I mean, Thiago Moises, who recently got beat by Islam Makhachev, is ranked 15th. Maybe that's a great way to go for Zeev. Yeah, I would just go for that. I mean, the only reason I'm sort of keeping him away from Brad Riddell is I quite like Brad Riddell and I like Fazeev, so I don't really want them to fight because I'd like to see both of them move up a little bit. But I think Thiago Moises could be a good shout. They're on a similar kind of pathway because Moises only fought recently against Makhachev. It's a very different fight. He's not going to get laid on by Fazeev. You know, he's going to be using his... Fazeev's obviously much more of a striker. So, yeah, why not do that?
Should we step up to the main card?
Let's step it up.
I mean, it started strong, I thought. Song versus Kenny, I thought, wonderful fight.
Yeah, did you have any dispute with the decision? Because I didn't, but Casey Kenny clearly did.
Yeah, he was not a happy chap. And I thought it was... I thought the decision was right. I thought Kenny fought really well. And he was very aggressive. But I just didn't think he was quite as... I don't think the shots were as accurate. And I just thought Song fought a better fight.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Song, particularly, I think maybe the first two rounds, from what I remember, I think he won that fight relatively clearly. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, it wasn't like he didn't steamroll him or anything. But I thought he clearly won that by decision. And the funny thing was you've then got Casey Kenny talking to Uriah Faber as if he's won the fight, being like, hey, you got one left. You got one left, Uriah, me and you, let's go. And Uriah's there like, mate, you just lost that fight. I don't know what you're talking about.
Am I right in saying when they announced it, Kenny then climbed the octagon?
Yeah, but he climbed the octagon straight after the fight with his hands in the air as if to say like he'd won. Then afterwards, once they announced that Song won, he did that thing where he's kind of like sort of shrugging his shoulders and looking around at everyone as if like, as if, what the hell is this craziness? And then climbed the octagon and put his hands in the air as if to say, you know who won that fight or whatever. And I'm like, mate, Song Yadong won that fight. Like, it was a weird reaction. I mean, the thing is, in his defense, it must be really difficult to be in a fight. It's a situation neither of us have been in, so we can't comment too much. But that thing of being in a fight and sort of judging it as you're in it, like, it must be impossible to do. I kind of think, unless it's really obvious, I don't think any fighter should get too upset unless your corner is filling your head with nonsense and saying to you, we've won round one, we've won round two, just stay safe in round three or anything like that. And then you lose, you'd probably be looking at your corner going, what are you doing? Like, I could have gone harder or I could something like that. That maybe makes sense. But if you're just judging this fight for yourself and saying, I'm winning this fight, I think that's a really dangerous game to play because I just don't see how it's possible to clearly judge a fight whilst you're in it. It just seems it must be a really, really hard thing to do. I'm sure some fighters can do it, but I think it must be really hard to do. And it's clearly hasn't, if that's what he was doing, it's not worked out for him. And hopefully he won't be doing that anytime soon again.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't got a lot more to add to that.
No. I mean, next up was Tisha Torres and Angela Hill. I mean, I think, like me, you were probably hoping for an Angela Hill win. We've had Angela Hill on the podcast. It was a great episode that we had with her. And, you know, like with any of these things, when you meet these fighters and you interview them and you learn more about them as people And as anyone that's listened to this podcast for a while will know, we make a joke of the fact that every time we chat to a fighter, we go, they were so lovely, they were so nice. And we're not putting that on. We genuinely feel it at that time. So when you meet someone and they're then going into a fight against someone you haven't had on the podcast and you haven't met and chatted with and all that kind of stuff, you are biased. You do want them to win. You are cheering them on. But unfortunately, she didn't really have many answers for Tisha Torres, it seemed. It seemed like Torres was just... the commentary was saying she's too quick, it seemed that way, too elusive.
So fast.
Yeah.
So fast. And taking nothing away from Angela Hill, she went in there and she does what she does. And I didn't think her Muay Thai style worked in that fight. I thought... taking nothing away from Tisha Torres, I thought she looked incredible last night. Like, really solid. Everything she threw was precise. She was super, super sharp on her toes. Movement was brilliant. And, yeah, I just think it was way too much for Angie last night. And I don't think she had many answers for it. And you could tell she looked frustrated as the fight was sort of starting to unfold a little bit. But, yeah. Credit to Tisha. I thought she sent out a message last night that she's definitely a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the one thing, again, from my armchair fan perspective, when I know so little in reality, as I'm sure a lot of our listeners are feeling, well, if they were true with themselves, probably not, are that way as well. The advice she was given in her corner by the end, by before the start of round three, I thought seemed like good advice. And she didn't follow it from what I saw.
Again, remind me of the advice.
They were calling for takedowns. And I know that that's not traditionally Angela Hill's game, but the most success she had in that whole fight for me was right at the end of round two. She got her down and got her. Yeah. Was she even in mount?
Yeah.
She might have even been in mount at the end of round two. It's just that there was only about 10 seconds left in the round, so she couldn't do much with it. I think in round one, they might have been clinched up against the fence and she kind of got her down, or at least was like pushing her up against the fence, doing a tiny bit.
Back, I think.
Yeah. So there were a couple of moments where it's like, hang on a minute, you seem to be doing quite well in the clinch up against the fence and, you know, in the wrestling exchanges, which is surprising because Tisha Torres, I think by all accounts, is a good wrestler. So they were calling for the takedown before the start of round three. And I don't remember Angela Hill shooting once during that round. Now, there might be a really valid reason for that. She might have just not been able to find the range, or there was no opening, or maybe she had an injury, or I don't know. But I did find it surprising that they were telling her to go for the takedowns and it didn't look like she attempted one, because that's where I thought she was having the most success in the fight.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. Couldn't agree more. It's a shame because, you know, as you said, we can't help but get behind the fighters that we spoke to, and she was absolutely delightful. But it is what it is, and yeah, she just had no answers for Torres last night. Yeah, she looked every bit her name. She was a tiny tornado last night.
Absolutely.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
comes to Tisha Torres. She's calling for a top five opponent. I don't know. I mean, I think Mackenzie Dern and Marina Rodriguez are already booked up. I don't think Yan Jinan has a fight, so maybe that's one. But Tisha Torres is only 10th, so she might have to settle for outside the top five, in which case I'm not sure if Nina Nunes is booked yet. I haven't checked that out.
But that's a good fight.
There's loads of good fights in there for her. You know, Nina Nunes, Yan Jinan, if they want to give her someone that high up the pecking order. I don't think Joanna Jędrzejczyk is booked, but I think if I'm Joanna, I'm waiting for a bigger fight than that. I think Joanna should probably be really getting a title shot. I mean, or even a rematch with Zhang Weili, because that was such an amazing first fight. And there's an argument that Joanna won that fight, so I think a rematch there would be an absolute cracker.
From what I can get from Joanna's Instagram, I think she's just enjoying a bit of sunshine. Like, she just seems to be doing a bit of, like all of these photos, she looks like a model now. It's like out there in the sunshine. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, she's earned an holiday. But, yeah, I think a rematch with Weili will be incredible. I think that's a great fight.
Yeah. That's the thing. Joanna's not had a fight for ages, but we're still talking about her. She is one of the biggest names in that division. Still, I think, one of the biggest names in the UFC. Joanna Jędrzejczyk is an absolute legend. I really hope we do get to see her fight again soon. But moving on, Chiesa Luque. What were your thoughts on that one?
So, Chiesa gets Luque in Chiesa's signature move.
Yep.
Luque gets out of it. And then, in Chiesa's domain, stops Chiesa.
Yeah.
No, I did not see that coming.
No, I don't think anyone did. I mean, amazingly, it looked like Chiesa got the better of the striking. He had that lateral movement and popped in with a 1-2 that got cut under Luque's eye.
Yeah.
Then went in for a takedown. Brilliant. Got the back. Brilliant. He just couldn't. He was so close. He couldn't quite get under the chin. He was
Luque
on the chin.
Luque said 80%, didn't he? He said he had
did
me at 80%, yeah.
Really? Well, he just couldn't quite get under the chin. It was cranking at the neck and it looked very painful, but he wasn't under the chin. Luque fought it enough to then get up. And it seemed like, I don't know. I mean, was Chiesa complacent in the way he got up? Is that taken away from Luque? I don't know. He locked in that choke really, really well. I think it was a Das, might be wrong. But it seemed really surprising that he was caught in that exchange. And maybe that's what you get when you train regularly with Gilbert Burns. I mean, Gilbert Burns is a high level, if not maybe the highest level jiu-jitsu guy in the UFC at the moment, now that Damian Maia's not really doing much anymore. Luque pulled it out of the bag and is now on, I think, a 4-fight win streak. I think he's won now 10 of his last 11 fights, and the one he lost was Wonderboy. And before that, he got beat by Leon Edwards. So he's definitely up there in the title conversation. I mean, we know that Usman's booked against Colby Covington. I am not a fan of that fight. I don't think Colby's done enough to earn it. All he's done was beat a Tyron Woodley that was, with all due respect to him, not the same guy that Tyron was when he was champion. He'd already been beaten at that point, I think, by both Usman and Burns in complete shutout fights. Mentally, he's admitted that he wasn't quite there. And then Colby comes along and beats him and then goes straight back into a title shot. Like, I know Usman's been active and fought Masvidal twice and fought Burns and all that stuff, but Colby's just gone Usman, loss, Woodley, win, back to Usman. And then you've got poor old Leon Edwards putting together a 9-fight win streak or whatever it was. Then obviously he had the eye poke with Muhammad. He was supposed to... Leon Edwards was supposed to be the one that fought Woodley immediately after Woodley got beat by Usman. If the pandemic doesn't happen, Leon Edwards probably destroys Tyron Woodley and goes straight into a title shot, much like Gilbert Burns got to do. But it now seems like, with the way things played out with Bilal Muhammad, with the way things unfortunately went in that last, like, minute of the Nate Diaz fight, which is, left a real impression in everyone's brains that, oh, if it went on a little bit longer, Leon would have lost that fight.
It's so frustrating, though, Blake, because, you know, that fight should not be defined by that. You know, he got clipped. He didn't get beat. He won that fight by a landslide, completely dominated Nate for the other rounds and the best part of that round. Yes, he got clipped. He didn't get stopped. He'd done what a champ does and he got through it. And if anything, like, that was more on Nate Diaz for standing there and pointing and kind of, you know, joking at the fact that he'd clipped him and not finishing him. Because I do think that finish was potentially there. But, but credit to Leon. And, I mean, God, we don't need to talk about how unlucky that man is anymore because, you know, he should be fighting for that belt. And it's just an absolute shambles that it's not happening. And, yeah, you know, I don't think many of us have got anything to say about Colby Covington that's positive.
Yeah, you think of him as a bit of a melt, don't you?
It's a total melt, mate.
I'd really love you to call Colby Covington a melt to his face because he wouldn't know what that means, surely.
No. I mean, I'm all brave now over Zoom. I won't be calling him a melt to his face.
I'll be like, Colby, you know, do you know what melt is? Because my mate Stu, he's called you a melt. I mean, look, Dana White in the press conference also unfortunately added to Leon's woes, I think, by suggesting that he probably should take another fight, which is a shame. He said that in the press. He was asked about Leon Edwards and Luque and the situation and blah, blah, blah. And that I think the question was, oh, do you think Leon should be taking another fight? And Dana said it's probably a good idea, given everything that's going on. So Dana White said that.
No, who does Leon fight?
Well, I mean, maybe he fights Luque for a number one contender shot. I mean, I'm sure Leon would be happy to fight Masvidal because there's so much beef there and everything.
And money.
But yeah, I mean, maybe they'd want to throw him Gilbert Burns. I don't see why he would want to take that fight. Like, why fight Gilbert Burns? You should be getting a title shot. But unfortunately, as we've discussed before, the UFC is not always a meritocracy. You know, trash talking and money making is a lot of what they're about. And that's why Colby Covington can sit on his ass, I don't want to say washed up. It sounds too harsh. We've had Woodley on this show and I really liked him. He was a nice guy. A Woodley that was not anywhere near his prime championship self is who Colby Covington beat. And then he goes straight back into a title shot. To me, that's not right. That's not how it should work. And Leon's been there doing what he can. There's been a pandemic. His opponent in Khamzat Chimaev at the time caught COVID, so he couldn't fight. Leon catches COVID, so they couldn't fight. This is just, it's not his fault. These are things that happen. And then the eye poke with Muhammad, these things happen all the time. It's like, you know, it wasn't intentional. These things happen. And I feel like I could get on this podcast every week and just talk about how sorry I feel for Leon Edwards and how much I feel like he just deserves that title shot. And that's not to say that I think he's the champion in waiting or that he would beat Usman. Usman seems to be on a different level to everyone at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think the betting lines would have Usman as a favourite against absolutely everyone.
100%.
But Leon deserves the shot. And I don't think there's anyone more deserving than him. But it seems like the UFC are not necessarily going to give him that shot anytime soon.
I read a little statement from Chiesa. He was very, very complimentary and respectful for Luque and said that he was physically bang on. He said he'd been battling some stuff in his head leading up to this fight, but said, I expect to have a few more fights and I'll get back to where I am now. So he seems positive and I mean, obviously he didn't take much damage in that fight, so hopefully we'll see Chiesa back in the octagon pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think I read that as well. I think Chiesa's looked amazing at 170 pounds. He was clearly killing himself to get down to lightweight. Since moving up, he's been on a 4-fight win streak against some decent opponents as well. I mean, RDA, I know he was a lightweight champion and then moved up to welterweight, but he's no mug at welterweight. He was a decent fighter. Yeah. Neil Magny is a top-level constantly in the top 10, Neil Magny,
yep.
and he dealt with him incredibly well. So, yeah, I can see Chiesa coming back and doing well. And it's in his favour that he's one of the rare guys in that division that hasn't fought Usman yet. So if he gets two wins against decent opponents, maybe like a Wonder Boy or I don't know who else is maybe kind of slightly behind him in the rankings over in at welterweight, but a Wonder Boy fight would be great for him, and I'm sure he'll find himself back in title contention soon.
Yeah, yeah. Should we get on to the next one?
Oh, this one, yeah. This one was probably my favourite fight.
It was mine.
Because there was this really great moment just as it was being announced. This little tweet came up. And it was just so good, wasn't it? Wasn't it good? What you should do is go back and rewatch it just for the tweet.
Do you know what? My Zoom's playing up. You're breaking up. I can barely hear you, mate.
No, it was a good fight. I don't think that this was... Amazingly, I thought this was going to be fight of the night. I still think Fiziev and Green was the best fight. So you do need to go and check that one out. That was a cracker. But if you haven't seen Fiziev and Green, this was the one.
Oh, I mean... Whew. Are we looking at a completely new Jose Aldo? Because that man that got him that octagon last night looked incredible. Punches in bunchings, and that speed that he was throwing them at was just incredible.
The way he rips the body as well. Like, you remember what he did to Jeremy Stephens, where he just put him down with that kind of liver shot, that kind of like left uppercut to the body. He's just incredible the way he does that. The leg kicks, the way he hits the body, the speed. He's just so compact. You look at his arms. He's so just like this compact, muscly, speedy arm just throwing out at your face.
I didn't think there was loads of leg kicks last night. I was expecting more, and there wasn't. But from what I was hearing, he's been training with like the military, like the
really?
Boxing, like the Marine Corps boxing. Is where he's been learning, like where he's been. I imagine that's where he's been throwing, you know, learning these combinations, because he wasn't throwing like two shots. It was a jab, then it was like four or five shots, and they were lightning. And like you say, he was going for that body a lot as well. And, you know, your real basic Muay Thai is a left-right low kick, and he's the absolute don of that. And there wasn't loads of it. And it didn't need it, because his hands were just phenomenal and lovely respecting that fight as well. They both seemed to be, you know, enjoying fighting each other. I suppose as that fight went on, Munoz probably a little less. I thought Munoz really held his own, but it was in a different league last night.
Yeah, and it's constantly mentioned. But Jose Aldo's only 34. Yeah. Pedro Munhoz is actually 2 days older than Jose Aldo. Mm. And that's amazing given everything that he's achieved in his career. I mean, it might be miles on the clock in terms of fight years. Maybe he is a lot older. Maybe his body is suffering that wear and tear and stuff like that. But it didn't show last night. He really put it to Pedro Munhoz, and Pedro Munhoz is a great fighter. Like, he's been in the top 10 for a long time. What's next for Aldo? I think there's a few suggestions out there. Mine is I'd love him to fight Dominic Cruz, because I do think he needs to get a few wins before going back into a title shot. But I put that out on Twitter and the response wasn't that great for it.
Oh, did that one not get on the UFC?
That did not. It's only the one, you know. Just baby steps for now. Just the one for now. I'll be coming for Sean Sheehan soon, and just trying to get on there with every fight. I put out Dominic Cruz. I still think that's a great fight. I probably would favour Aldo, because I think he's got more power than Dominic Cruz. But Cruz has got great movement. And we know that Cruz, he was a 135 champion when Aldo was a 145 champion. I think it's just a super fight, and I think it'd be a absolutely brilliant watch. But a lot of people were saying they'd rather he's fought TJ Dillashaw.
Mm.
Thoughts?
me. I mean, after we spoke to Pip on our little WhatsApp group following our bantamweight special we done last week, which if you haven't listened, we talk about that division at length and all the potential fights. But it would appear that I didn't realise at the time, whatever fight we were talking about, one of us would go, yeah, I'd love to see him fight Dominic Cruz. So apparently, we've been lining up Dominic Cruz to fight everybody in that division. But I do think that Aldo Cruz, that's a fight I'd like to see. Aldo Dillashaw, not just yet. Like, I think that's the super fight, Aldo Cruz, and I'm all over it.
Yeah, I mean, old critical Pip. I mean, there's a reason we're mentioning Dominic Cruz all the time, because either A, he's an absolute legend that we want to see fight legends while they still can because he is much older, and B, if you're a younger fighter, you're going to call him out because he's a huge, huge name. So, yeah, shut up, Pip.
Yeah, Pip.
Yeah, like, Pip.
The other thing is as well, he's not fought a lot of them legends because obviously Dominic Cruz has been injured for so many years.
Yes, you know, and they were in different weight classes as well.
Yeah, and so now we hope that Dominic Cruz is fighting fit, and some of these fighters are, we're saying they're, you know, twilight years. Like, as we said, like, Jose Aldo, it's not his fault he looks 60. Like, you know, he's a... You know, he still moves like an 18-year-old and he looked absolutely devastating last night. And, yeah, throw that in an octagon with, you know, Dominic Cruz on his toes, moving around that octagon. I'm all over that fight.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. That's the one I want to see. Mm. I think that Jose needs a few wins before he can go for the belt. I don't think throwing him in with TJ right now is the best. I think also, if anyone should go in with TJ, the person that's really earned it is
Francis Ngannou. Oh.
No, that TJ's earned a fight with Francis Ngannou, considering what he's done. But I think the person that's earned the TJ fight is probably Rob Font.
I agree.
I think Font deserves that more, so I think that would be slightly unfair. But again, in terms of big names and big money, TJ Dillashaw versus Jose Aldo would be an absolutely huge fight, and I wouldn't be surprised if that did get made. And I think Aldo did call for it in the press conference. I think he was like, I'll have a bit of TJ. So that may very well happen. But I'd rather he fought Cruz while he still could. The TJ fight will still be there a little bit further down the line.
Definitely. Go and check out the Bantamweight special. We put it out last week, I think. It's in the archives. Go and give it a listen. And we work our way through the top sort of 15, really, and look at all the exciting fights that are, you know, are to be made in that absolutely cram-stacked division. The main big one. The big boys.
The main event. Lewis v. Garn. Now,
who did you have?
I had Garn, but by decision, I thought he would do what he did to Rosenstrike and Volkov. I thought his movement would be too good and he'd stay away from the power for long enough to just rack up a decision win that, quite frankly, I thought would be maybe a slightly dull affair, like not the most exciting fight in the world. But, you know, Derek Lewis, it was always going to be a slight coin flip because Derek Lewis only needs one. Yeah. And that's where I was like, oh, you can never be sure. As much as I thought Garn would win by decision, you're never sure. I didn't necessarily expect Garn to get a TKO victory.
No. I thought it would be much the same as what you said. I thought Garn would kind of be on his toes, be moving about, and then I think I saw it more in the latter rounds that maybe Garn would get a little bit more confident and overcommit, and Lewis, as we've seen so many times, can be like however many rounds down and Lewis will throw a shot, fight's done. I kind of thought that might happen. And for the whole of that fight, I was just thinking, he's going to get caught. And it's the same with when you watch Francis fight. It's heavyweights for you. It's so exciting because the whole thing can just turn on its arse in literally a second. And I love that. Cyril Gain just looked incredible. Just looked like a middleweight. Fought the perfect fight. Like, you're not going to fight Derek Lewis and come out, draw a line and stand and trade in the middle of the octagon, are you? Because that's not how you want to be fighting fighters like that. You need to fight fighters exactly how Cyril Gane done it. You know,
but there's not many heavyweights that can.
No.
The only person I can think of is another recent guest of ours that we've had is Tom Aspinall. I don't know if his movement is quite as good as Cyril Garn's, but I do think Tom Aspinall's got fantastic footwork and fantastic movement. But that's what you need. And I can't think of any other heavyweight that moves anywhere close to the way Cyril Garn moves.
And what's interesting as well is when we've not put the episode out yet, but we was talking to Tom Aspinall about the heavyweight division and timings and such, and how, you know, in the heavyweight division, the top 10 are generally fighters that aren't in their 20s, you know, are in their kind of mid to, you know, late 30s is where you're seeing these champs. Cyril Garn, only 31. You know, he's a young lad.
And not only that, he's only been doing MMA for 3 years.
I know, it's insane.
He's been doing MMA for 3 years. Before that, he did Muay Thai for 3 years. Yeah. That's it. I think he was doing basketball before that. That is mental. And he was so unbelievably composed throughout the entire week. And that was the one point where I thought maybe Garn could get some kind of TKO or knockout, but it wasn't the way it went down. It was because I was thinking to myself, Garn seems so chilled out for the entire week. He took everything in his stride, being the bad guy, being in enemy territory in Houston. He's got a kid due in about 2 weeks' time. He just seemed so chilled. He's only had 9 MMA fights up until this point. And Derek Lewis was mentioning the pressure of being the hometown boy all week on the embedded series and all of that stuff. And it did make me wonder, maybe if this is a boring affair for 3 rounds, you get to round 4 or 5, Derek might go, oh, screw this. I want the fans behind me. The fans are urging me on, or they're booing the fight or something like that, and would overextend and leave himself open something. Because, you know, Garn's movement is what we talk about, but he's a big heavyweight that does possess power. And I thought that could leave him open something. What I didn't expect was Garn to just chop Derek Lewis's leg to the point where Derek Lewis just seemed to just be completely out of ideas and just not know how to do. Garn was just way too much for him because of the leg kicks. He didn't have any movement. It took away a lot of his power, and Derek just couldn't touch him. I think the stats were something like 116 strikes for Garn and about 12 for Derek Lewis. I'm probably not exactly right there, but that is roughly what it was. That's not too much of an exaggeration. 116 strikes for Garn, 12 for Derek Lewis. That's ridiculous. And I know it only takes one, but he just could not find anything on him.
I thought he looked a bit lost. I really did. And as you said, he was out of ideas. And of all them shots that Garn was throwing, like, a lot of them weren't being thrown for any other reason than to score points. And some of them, like, low kicks weren't being thrown with venom. I'm sure they hurt when they come from a fella that big. But there was lots of point scoring going on, and it was just enabling him to keep his range and keep Derek Lewis completely unsure of what was going to work. And he just, like you say, there was nothing coming back in the end. And I think Cyril just took his chance. And yeah, there we go. Got the strap. And what a fight we've got coming up, potentially.
Yeah, I mean
before Francis.
Before we get on to that, do you have any thoughts on what Lewis does next?
Gets a bit of air to his balls first, obviously.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just trying to think of the division. Have you got a fight in mind?
Well, I don't know if he's booked or not. I'm trying to look it up on Tapology now, but Jairzinho Rozenstruik might be a good one because he doesn't move like Garn does, but he is a good kickboxer, technically a better striker than Lewis, I would say, and hits very, very hard, and that might be the kind of fight that is good for Derek Lewis. I don't know if Jairzinho's booked or not, But I was trying to look it up, but I don't know how to spell Rosenstrike well enough on Tapology to actually look this up. but I think if that's not, if he's not booked, then I would really love to see that.
I think that's an absolutely perfect fight.
Yeah, I think so. I want Derek Lewis to have, like, I think his title contention days might be numbered. I mean, when you look at, we got Garn and then Garnu coming up. You got Stipe waiting in the wings. John Jones saying he's going to start competing in 2022. Then you've got the young fighters like the Aspinalls. You still got Curtis Blaydes hanging around. You know, there's a lot of decent heavyweights out there. The heavyweight division is looking pretty good at the moment. Dorcas as well, I think, looks like he's a good fighter. So I wonder if Derek Lewis's title aspirations are going to have to be put on hold, possibly indefinitely, because I don't know that he's going to get title shots before another year and a half, 2 years, and will he still be doing it then? He's had back injuries in the past. I don't know. So I just want him to have some good, fun fights where he can have fun, show his class, and try and get some big knockouts in some stand-up fights, maybe. So that's what I'd like to see if Rosenstrike isn't booked up.
Just looking through that division, that is the perfect fight.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. So that leaves, obviously, Cyril Francis.
I mean, what a fight that is.
It's got to happen now, hasn't it? What's going on with Stipe in the mix here? Is there anything?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Stipe. I think he said he wants to put a lot of weight on because he was a few stone. We mentioned this to Tom Aspinall as well. We talked about Stipe coming in like 2 stone lighter than Francis Ngannou in the rematch. That clearly didn't work out well for him, particularly with that kind of wrestling exchange that they had where Francis stuffed that takedown very easily. I think the extra weight would be beneficial for Stipe. I don't know what's going on with Stipe, but I don't think he's going to jump in front of Garn. So I think it is going to be Garn versus Ngannou. And with the pandemic, you never know what's possible. We've had a London card move to Vegas recently. But if things with the pandemic get better and better over the next, say, 4 or 5 months, and Paris, who have only recently, or France, like, legalized MMA, that's only happened in the last, like, year, the timing couldn't be better to do the first ever UFC in France and do it in Paris, headlined by Cyril Garn and Francis Ngannou, both of which... Well, Cyril Garn is French-born, French-trained. Ngannou from Cameroon, but moved over to France, trained in France for years. Both of them are a product of the MMA factory over in Paris. So they will know Francis so well, which will be so intriguing and interesting in the build-up to it. If they can make that happen, I know Dana White said he wants to do it, but he can't guarantee anything at the moment just because of the pandemic. But if they could do that fight in Paris... That would
Eurostar,
be massive.
Me and you, mate. Heading that way.
Yeah. Oh, pop the Disney World on the way home. It'd be great.
I mean, that's an absolute monster of a fight. I don't even want to think how that would unfold. But
we will. If that fight happens, we will obviously do a pre-fight show. And there'll be months to, you know, think about it and all that. But what's your gut reaction now after seeing what you saw last night? Who wins? I mean, we'll change our minds as much as we like going down the road. But right now, who wins, Garn or Ngannou?
Francis will close that gap a lot easier than what Derek Lewis couldn't. Mm-hmm. And I think Cyril Garn does not want to be hit by Francis Ngannou. I think it's a really good fight, but... I can't see anybody beating Francis at the moment.
Oh, so interesting, because maybe it's just recency bias. I'm leaning Garn.
Really?
I think I make you exactly right. Ngannou has got, I think, far more athleticism and ability to close the distance than Derek Lewis. Yeah. I mean, Derek Lewis can explode. I mean, he's a big round guy that you don't expect to be able to do that, but he can.
I was watching him train, and I was watching his training videos when he was boxing, and his movement was brilliant, and he was shutting down distance like really well.
Yeah.
And again, I think he was just a bit, I think he had an off night. I just think he had an off night.
Yeah. Well, I think that Cyril Garn's movement and the way that he can keep away from big shots, I think sometimes Francis, I think he was better in the Stipe rematch because I think he knew he had to be. But if you look back at some of his other fights, particularly like the Jairzinho Rosenstrike one, he just was swinging wild punches, like really, really wild. And he knew if one connected, which it did, then that's it, game over. But there wasn't an awful lot of technical prowess in what he was doing in those fights. He was definitely better against Stipe, so maybe a lot of that is improving. But I think from a technical standpoint, Garn is much better than Ngannou. I think Ngannou will have the power, but I wonder if Ngannou's kind of natural way of striking, which is less technical and it is obviously incredibly dangerous and powerful, but I think it would probably leave a hell of a lot of openings for someone as technically gifted as Garn. And I wonder if Garn could do it. And also, has Ngannou ever been 5 rounds except that fight that he lost against Stipe?
I don't think so.
Garn has. Against Rosenstrike, against Volkov, probably a few others. I think cardio-wise, Garn might have him. I think movement-wise, Garn has him.
Somebody got caught up in the moment last night, didn't they?
Oh, mate, I'm on the Garn train. Choo-choo! I don't know. I mean, look, it's another one of those fights that come the time and when you're looking at, you know, we've seen a lot of Garn over the last week and stuff, and I quite like him.
Let's talk about that, though, this last week and Garn, because he's just, I mean, you touched on the fact that he's very composed. He's just got this really nice smile that just seems to just, like, constantly be on his face. I loved the fact at the stare down, like, Derek Lewis, like, was really aggressive and, like, pushed right into him. And Cyril Garn just had that look of, like, mate, what are you doing? Like... He just looked like sort of laughed as if to say, like, what are you doing, you donut? Like, and I just thought that's a really good mindset because he didn't bite back and he didn't look uncomfortable or put off. He just, it was like, mate, why are you bothering me this? We'll sort it all out in there tomorrow. And I just think that mindset carried through. And, you know, he got in that octagon and did not look like he was about to fight Derek Lewis. He looked very, very calm and confident, and as you said, totally composed. And I think we've seen people get in the octagon with fighters like Lewis and Francis and almost look beat before they've even started, because these are terrifying men. They terrified each other, obviously, Derek and Francis, because they didn't throw a punch at each other when they fought. And, you know, and that... You know, as a fan as well, as I mentioned, it gets into your head and you're just thinking any given moment now, Cyril, it's going to be curtains. Like, he's going to just knock you. And he didn't. And all that's going to do is just make Cyril Garn even more confident, even more composed when he gets in against these, you know, super high-level fighters. So, yeah, I'm certainly not writing off Cyril Garn against Francis, but my gut just thinks that, as you said, the athleticism of Francis is better than what I've seen of Derek Lewis's, and I think that could be a very important factor when they fight.
I definitely think it'll be a closer, more competitive fight than what we saw last night. And as you've said, Ngannou, we say Lewis only needs one. Ngannou really does only need one, and he only needs one to just skim off you as well. I mean, you look what he did to Cain Velasquez. He didn't even catch him clean and he knocked him out.
Cain Velasquez. Do you know what I mean?
I know. Yeah, that's it. He just kind of buckled under a punch that kind of skimmed him. So, I think in terms of what you were saying, I think you're absolutely right. And isn't it a trend that we're seeing lately where at the weigh-ins or the press conferences, the one that gets the most heated is the one that loses? We saw it with Figueiredo Moreno 2, where Figueiredo pushed Moreno. Connor and Dustin 3, Connor was getting right up on Dustin and trying to play all those mind games and stuff. And now Derek Lewis and Cyril Garn. And I wonder if these people that are doing that, that are trying to intimidate, Are they doing it to try and find a kind of chink in the armour of their opponent because they're feeling vulnerable? Is there something in that? Like, you know, we know that Figueiredo has struggled with weight cuts before. Conor hasn't won a fight. Well, you had the Cerrone fight, I know, but that was still a while ago now. And a lot of people said, well, Cerrone was never at his level. So you can't really, not that you can't count it, but it's a tricky one, isn't it, that Cerrone win? Because,
yeah,
you know, when you go from fighting Khabib to Cerrone and then Poirier, Khabib and Poirier are at such a higher level than Cerrone. So, yeah, that's how people don't view that win as highly as maybe Conor or the uber Conor fans would like. So, these people that are kind of pushing up against opponents, pushing people and really trash talking and trying to get under the skin of their opponents, and their opponents are just kind of laughing it off or looking around, as you say, going, what are you doing this for? The ones that are doing all that stuff are the ones that end up losing. And, you know, Cyril Garn's nickname, I think, is Borgaman, which basically means the happy boy or the good boy. And it's like, and you talk about him walking around with a smile on his face, and that's why, that's what he wants to put across, just this happy guy. And he said, no, none of it's personal. No, even with Ngannou, having been at the MMA factory before, nothing's personal. This week, with being the bad guy in Houston, nothing's personal. It's a sport to me. It's like going, you know, I don't think he said this exactly, but it seems like it's like going out and playing a game of basketball. It's just that I might get knocked out. But
yeah,
he just seems to take it as a sport, and he's incredibly chilled out, and that mindset seems to be really working well for him.
Just still glancing down the rankings here of the heavyweight division, and you mentioned about Rosenstruck fighting the Black Beast. Scheduled for September the 25th, September 25th even, is Rosenstruck versus Curtis Blaydes.
Ooh.
Mm.
So Rosenstruck Blaydes is September 25th.
Yep.
Well, if Blaydes wins that, Blaydes got sent to the Shadow Realm by Lewis only a little while ago, so I don't think that fight win. But if Rosenstruck wins, I think him v Derek Lewis is a perfect fight.
Mm.
So there you go. But that's a good one. Rosenstruck Blaydes would be a fun fight.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I'll just think, just before we start to wrap it up, because we've gone over the hour now, but if Blaydes wins that, where does he go?
Oh, God, I'd have to pull up the old rankaroonies. If Blaydes, well, does he try and welcome back Stipe? That'd be the best fight for Blaydes. I don't know if Stipe would
good
want
work,
to...
Harrison. Oh, pulled it from nowhere.
Oh, yes. look, I think that'd be a fantastic fight, because they both love a wrestle as well.
Mm.
But and it would definitely shoot Blaydes up there. I think he needs a big name win for people to really take him seriously after what happened in the Derek Lewis fight and stuff. But whether Stipe would want to take that fight, I mean, Stipe, the most winningest heavyweight champion there has been in UFC history. You know, he's 1-1 with Ngannou. He's got every right to say, I want that trilogy fight straight away. I can see, and Stipe's not young either. Stipe's cracking on in age, so I can see Stipe going, no, give me Ngannou in the trilogy, and that's what I want, and that's it. But I can imagine a situation where Garner's beaten Ngannou, and then would he want to go straight for a belt? And let us not forget, the shadow looming over this whole division is the yet-to-even-debut in the division, John Jones. So can you imagine John Jones versus Cyril Garn? That's a fight. I think that's a better fight than Ngannou Garn.
Ooh, I see. I'll be interested to. I think John Jones would get hold of him, and I think he could ragdoll Cyril a little bit.
Maybe you're right. Actually, maybe you're right. I didn't think of the wrestling exchange, because Cyril Garn doesn't have bad wrestling. I think he's fine. But again, Jones has been doing it for a decade and a bit, probably, maybe even more, whereas Garn has learned so much and is so impressive to have only been doing this for 3 years. And he has got submission wins. His first two fights in the UFC were submission wins. And he can wrestle a bit, but he won't be at John Jones's wrestling level, so that will be interesting. But how will Jones deal with the weight? Oh, the heavyweight division is good.
Maybe John Jones is... you know, expected this to happen. Maybe he thought, look, this Garn lad is legit. you know, and maybe he's going to sit tight until Garn maybe beats Francis, and then John Jones thinks, that's a fight I'd much rather have to come back and get that belt than fight fucking Francis.
Look, Francis has got the touch of death, obviously, but I think...
I wish I had the touch of death.
The touch of death. but what if you couldn't turn it off? What if you're like that bloke in the old Skittles advert where like everything you touch turns to Skittles, but you're just the touch of death?
High-fiving people in the office and just literally obliterating them.
it's like, have you ever seen those episodes of Family Guy where they've got like the Grim Reaper and he's like high-fiving people and they're just dropping dead? It's like, oh, sorry. But Francis does have the touch of death, and thankfully he can turn it off and on at will. I think John Jones has fought guys before that people have said, oh, he hits so hard, he hits like a truck. And John Jones is like, yeah, I've dealt with those people before. That's not an issue for me. And I think you've got a blueprint for beating Ngannou in the way that Stipe did it the first time. I know he couldn't do it the second time, but I think there's every possibility that John Jones could implement that kind of game plan and take Ngannou down. The big thing with John Jones is, how is he going to be with the weight? Is he going to move as quickly? Is he going to be able to last in the fight as well? You know, putting on all this weight, is it going to in any way be of detriment to his ability as a fighter? Who knows?
But he's getting older as well. But it's John Jones. He just always pulls it off, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he is an absolute... I mean, look, I have my slight issues with John Jones. I think he's been popped a lot for the whole PED stuff. I know that there was, you know, it was Viagra, or it was a tainted supplement, or it was just...
John Jones has done lots of stuff outside of that octagon, mate, that isn't particularly great.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're 100% correct, and that bothers me as well. But as a sports person, leaving aside hit and runs on pregnant ladies and... everything else he's done, for me, as a from just purely the sporting aspect of it, I think it is very difficult to think that every time he's been popped for something, or they found a picogram or whatever it is, that it's all nothing. There's multiple separate mistakes on the part of USADA. I just don't buy that narrative. I just think you can't have this many issues. If there's one tainted supplement and you go, hang on a minute, no, it was a tainted supplement, then maybe fair enough. Although there are people in their careers like Michael Bisping and Daniel Cormier that have never popped for anything, and they've been tested absolutely loads. I think if you get caught with something more than once, I think there's no smoke without fire on that one. Well, do you disagree?
No, I just think it's quite clear that we've established today that you're a little bit in love with Cyril Garn and somebody don't like John Jones.
No, look, I think John Jones is a brilliant fighter. He's definitely...
Oh, now he's put that... Now you're going to stop... No, don't try... No, you're in there, mate. You've given him a load of math, right? You've already told me that you're going to be standing
mouth.
There. Yeah, you've already said that, like, you think it's really, really funny and you can't wait to see Colby Covington and tell him that I've called him a melt. And, like, I can't wait for the moment, just as you're on your phone, like, doing your little tweet for UFC, standing there with your mates, Paul Craig and John Gooden, and up comes John Jones and puts it on you. Oh, mate, I'm going to be standing there just in the background filming, going, yeah, he did say that, John. He did.
I stand by it. If he kills me, those will be my dying words. Is that, John, there is no smoke without fire, mate. My final breath leaves my body.
I will then take your phone and tweet John Jones' touch of death and then get that on the next UFC event. Right, we're done, yeah?
I think we're done, mate, on that bombshell. We're probably going to lose loads of fans on that. It's probably loads of like diehard John Jones fans that are like, no, there was this violation that USADA did. And no, he needed the Viagra. I know, I saw his penis not working. So he did need the Viagra. Oh yeah, all right, blah blah blah. Whatever. Maybe it's true, damn. Maybe it's not. but it's a lot of occasions, isn't it, guys?
So, yeah.
All right.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.